It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, Wisconsin students shared the challenges they've faced over the past year and what they need to succeed now. We'll get results from the Voices of Wisconsin Students Project. First, Rachel Vasquez joins me on the air because it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Member Drive. The last day of the drive, listener donations are the largest source of funding for WPR programs like Central Time. If you've been meaning to give, now is the time to do it because the drive ends at 6 o'clock. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And if you were one of the many who gave last hour, thank you so much. This hour, we have a goal of 20 gifts.
These hourly goals are important. They help us stay on track financially so we can keep the discussions going strong on the Ideas Network. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You are powerful because people who listen, like you, provide the most significant share of funding for WPR programs like Central Time. Your donation is an investment in Wisconsin Public Radio and in programs that deliver the greatest value to you.
Your contribution keeps independent public service radio on the air for you and for the entire community. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And this member drive, let the impact of your contribution go beyond WPR programs you love. Choose to plant a tree as your thank you gift with your donation of $10 a month or more. You'll power the essential news and quality entertainment you rely on WPR, and your thank you gift will help preserve forests in Wisconsin. Thank you for making a difference with your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Whatever your reason is for listening to Wisconsin Public Radio and Central Time, that's also your reason for giving. Maybe WPR is your source for in-depth news or interesting talk about a variety of topics. Maybe you love the weekend shows.
Right. The weekend shows are awesome. And just take a second and ask yourself, why am I listening right now? And then give for that exact reason at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, because your support is what makes WPR happen.
Giving to WPR is easy. All we need is your name, contact info, the amount of your gift, and how you'd like to pay.
The easiest thing in the world. It takes just a few minutes to make your contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio, and those few minutes fund your daily listening. Your support right now makes a huge difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
It's the last day of the spring drive. Already off to a good start this hour. Three gifts already made. Thank you so much. Now, when 17 more people support WPR programs by the end of this hour, we'll meet our goal. WPR is listener-powered, and that's why your gift is so important at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And as an added perk for supporting the programs you love, you could win $1,000 to spend on bikes and cycling gear at Wheel and Sprocket. So give right now. Take advantage of that gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And sustainers, those of you making ongoing monthly gifts, you are automatically entered. If you're not a sustainer yet, you can sign up right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
If you are a sustaining member making those ongoing monthly gifts, thank you. Make today maybe the day that you increase your support of WPR by $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount you choose at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And in Watoma says, I'm giving because of music, news, talk shows, and a lifetime of listening. We love that, Anne. What about you? What are your reasons for listening? Then take those reasons and make them your reason for giving right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You count on us for great conversations each and every day here on the Ideas Network. From the morning show up through Central Time and beyond, entertaining programs on the weekend as well. We count on you to help pay for it all, to help make it happen. You can make a big difference on this last day of the spring drive, your last chance to give during Central Time, really during any show, because after Central Time's over, the drive is over today. So take this opportunity and give now at WPR.org or 888 888- 202-2552. Take just that few minutes, and thank you so much for your support. This is Central Time. It's been an unprecedented year in a lot of ways, but how did it all affect Wisconsin's kids and their school experiences? Our next guests have touched base with dozens of young Wisconsinites about their school year and their mental health. Together, they've compiled the responses in the Voices of Wisconsin Students Project, Learning, Coping, and Building Resilience During COVID-19. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're a student yourself, what have been the biggest challenges of this school year? Parents, teachers, school staff, what are you seeing? Call 800-642-1234. Linda Hall is director of the Wisconsin Office of Children's Mental Health. Linda, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here during this week of Children's Mental Health Awareness.
And Sharon Belton is director of WIPS Research Partners. The Wisconsin Institute of Public Policy and Service, or WIPS for short, is a UW organization that provides analysis, research, and problem-solving expertise. Sharon, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Sharon, there's been a lot of conversation, including on this show, about how school shutdowns and virtual learning and all that has affected kids. Why did you think it was important to go and ask the actual kids themselves?
Well, I think, to be honest, there was very little information available about students' experiences and perspectives in terms of how they were processing and handling the COVID-19 pandemic, both from the perspective of their learning environments, but also from the perspective of their mental health. And at the same time, what coping strategies and resiliency were they developing in terms of helping them respond and cope with the situation?
Can you tell us a little bit about the focus groups and where you went around the state with kids grades 6 through senior year?
Sure. In January and February of this past winter, we conducted 23 virtual focus groups with a total of 160 middle and high school students from across the state of Wisconsin. The participants themselves represented 68 different Wisconsin communities and 38 different counties. And combined, they attend 96 different public and private and parochial schools. And we really wanted this to reflect the voices of Wisconsin students and provide an opportunity for kids from all corners of the state to get together with other kids like them to hear how each other was experiencing the pandemic and just have a conversation and an opportunity to talk more about it.
Linda, there's been a lot of concern about the impact of, you know, not being at school for so many kids, what it was going to mean for their mental and emotional well-being. Looking at the responses from kids around the state, what really stood out to you?
Well, we know that it's been a rough year for kids. Their social networks and their social supports have been disrupted in many ways. But I think what we also see in this report is that kids learned a lot about themselves, and they learned new activities, new hobbies, and they built resilience in new, sometimes pretty surprising ways. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, can you talk about, there's concerns, and we'll get to some of those, but can you talk about the lessons of resilience that might surprise some people?
Well, I'm going to ask Sharon to help me out with that one, because she's the person who really has more of the detail of the conversations with them. But I think that they, in some ways, when youth learned about themselves, they learned about their own rhythms and what works best for them in terms of responding to the virtual learning options that they had. They learned some new ways to work with what they had. Sharon, can you remember something in particular that stood out for you in terms of resilience?
Well, I think a couple of things related to the topic of resiliency and developing coping strategies is that despite very significant challenges across the board, the students that we spoke with have found the silver linings or the reasons to be positive, and many have developed a greater sense of self-awareness. In particular, I think students developed a greater appreciation and sense of gratitude for their families, their friends, their schools, and they were really appreciative of the opportunity to be in school in person and were very much looking forward to going back to school in person. And nearly every student that we talked with was able to identify some new coping mechanism or something that they could do to help them deal with the pandemic, from things like meditation, journaling, spending time outside, taking up a new hobby, exercising, playing chess, finding ways to connect with their friends online, playing an instrument, listening to music. For many of the high school students, just getting in their car and taking a drive and listening to music was a way that they could recharge. And I think obviously there were enormous challenges that kids have faced over the past year and are still facing. But I think it's also important to recognize that Wisconsin kids are very resilient. And that really came through in the conversations with the kids that we talked with.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Heidi is with us in Winona, Minnesota. Heidi, hello.
Hello. So I have a freshman and a senior in high school this year, both girls. And my senior has just been flying through, done great, got full ride academic scholarship to the college of her choice. It hasn't fazed her. My younger, however, has really struggled this year. And I think part of it is she didn't get that introduction to high school that most of the kids get. It was over halfway through the school year before she stepped foot on campus. And those changing friendships and stuff that naturally shift in high school, she didn't have the day-to-day interaction with her peers in person. And then to add insult to injury, she was also diagnosed with a chronic condition. So she's been struggling with illness, not COVID-related, but then trying to navigate this COVID world and digital learning. And it's just been a struggle.
Heidi, thank you so much for sharing that story. Good luck to well both of your daughters. I hope especially your freshman is able to get through this. Linda, can you talk about what we know about resources available, especially for people like Heidi's younger daughter who are facing that difficult time? What can be a difficult transition in a normal year going to high school, not plus all this stuff?
Yeah, I can't tell you how many families I've talked to over the past year where one of their children is doing great and adapting really well, and the other is having challenges. It really does depend a lot on what their social connectedness was, before the school buildings were closed, and how much they have figured out how to stay connected with others in their group. We are hearing, we hear it in this project, and our office also does listening sessions and additional ways that we reach out to youth. We hear them saying that they want adults to have more mental health literacy, to be able to understand mental health and talk with them about it. So they're really looking for easier conversations about mental health and reduced stigma, and they're looking for more support at school. I think the Voices of Wisconsin students, there were a number of students in that group who said that they couldn't get access to their counselors. Their counselors were overloaded, didn't have enough time to talk to them. And then not all schools have mental health therapy going on at school, which is another strategy for people to get help. So what we do know also is that kids rely on each other. And they help each other. And so we are hearing from youth that they want not only adults, but they want to learn more about mental health so that they can be better equipped to take care of themselves, know where to go for help, and be able to support their friends.
Thanks again for that call, Heidi. We're talking to Linda Hall with the Wisconsin Office of Children's Mental Health and Sharon Belton with WIPS Research Partners, telling us about the Voices of Wisconsin Students Project, how Wisconsin students say they're managing the challenges of the pandemic. You can join in with a story from your own family at 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Picking up our conversation with Linda Hall and Sharon Belton, looking at kids' mental health during a year of challenges and isolation, with a new report based on focus groups talking to students from grades 6 through 12. Sharon, Linda had mentioned something about stigma earlier, and that was a theme that came up with some of the kids you talked to, that they recognize a problem and they'd like to talk to someone. They're worried. Could you talk about some of the things they said about how they might be judged or viewed if they raised mental health concerns?
Yes, we ask kids, where are you going for support for your mental health and wellness? And what are some of the barriers that you might be encountering with respect to accessing that support? And stigma really was the main reason why the majority of the students that we talked to are not seeking help. They expressed emotions with respect to being afraid of, you know, showing their vulnerabilities with respect to mental health issues and being embarrassed or having a sense of shame that they can't handle a situation on their own. A lot of the students expressed skepticism about whether reaching out and asking for help will really work, or some of them struggled with the right kind of words to describe some of the things that they may be feeling. And a lot of the students expressed that they were concerned about whether they could trust adults or people that they might want to reach out to keep the information that they might share confidential. And, you know, want to have those conversations, but aren't sure, you know, how to go about having them, and being worried that they'll be labeled for having a mental health, you know, related concern. And I think in this month of mental health awareness, it's really an opportunity for people to talk with their kids about these important topics, because it's really on the top of their mind in terms of how they're coping.
Yeah, Linda, you mentioned adult mental health literacy being something that can help out kids a lot. What kind of things can we do as parents and teachers and school staff and members of the media to have a more positive conversation about mental health that avoids people thinking like there's a stigma that they'll be viewed negatively if they admit something like this?
Well, it's a lot more of just talking about it and normalizing it. Our office right now is working on a mental health curriculum that will be taught at the elementary, middle, and high school levels that will help to inform kids, give them the tools and the words they need to talk about mental health. And we hope will, as it is taught more, will also build the knowledge that other school staff have. So we know that that is important. I would say that We do a lot of reaching out. We have listening sessions. This week we're having an art gallery, and we're having a teen mental health panel as part of our Children's Mental Health Awareness Week. We hear all these things that Sharon just mentioned, but we also hear that where there are school mental health programs, and it's become more normal for kids to walk down the hall to see the therapist, that the stigma is being overcome. It's also being overcome in schools where Hope Squads and other peer-led groups are talking about this, and they're teaching these peer-led groups work on reducing stigma. And so those are important things to happen in the school. We've also heard that when kids go to therapy and they get better, that it starts to change their perception, and they also will advocate for other friends to get help if they need it.
And Sharon, as we wrap up, if there are teachers, policymakers, whoever out there listening right now, where can they go to access this report and hopefully get some use out of it?
Sure. Two things. The information about the project and the reports can be found on the WIPPS website, and that's WIPPS.org. There's a link to all of the reports on our website. And we're also doing a webinar discussion on Wednesday, May 5th, so coming up in 2 days, 2:30 to 4:30. It's open to the public. You can register for that Zoom presentation of the findings on our website as well. And you know, it will give us an opportunity to talk in a little more detail about, you know, the various findings of the reports.
We'll leave it there for now. Sharon, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
And Linda, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate it.
Linda Hall is director of the Wisconsin Office of Children's Mental Health, and Sharon Belton is director of WIPPS Research Partners. We talked about the Voices of Wisconsin Students project, looking at the challenges facing students during the pandemic and what the students themselves had to say about it. Coming up, we have more ways to get news than ever before, but some people don't consume any or not much at all. We're taking a look at the causes and costs of news avoidance. First is the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Member Drive. Rachel Vasquez joins me on air right now. Your support is the foundation of all funding for WPR programs. It's the largest piece. It's what makes the Ideas Network your go-to place for great conversations. We're encouraging you now on this last day of the drive to make your gift in support of the programs you count on. Do it online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
All right, Rob, we have 30 minutes left in this hour, and we are looking for 15 more people to join in on this last day of the Spring Member Drive. A big, big thank you if you've already given.
If you haven't, give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and your gift will fund the programs you enjoy.
We just heard a really cool project looking at how the pandemic has affected kids in Wisconsin. And what I loved about it is that we got to hear from the researchers behind the project, all about what they learned. But then we also got to hear from you, from parents in Wisconsin who are going through this, who are trying to help their kids get through the pandemic. And that really is what's special about Central Time and all of the programs on the Ideas Network. We work hard to bring you interesting conversations that will teach you something and then give you a chance to ask people with that knowledge all of your questions. These are the kinds of conversations that you can count on Central Time for.
And WPR is listener supported, and that means that your donation makes it all possible. Choose the amount that works for you and then make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
A great way to support WPR is by becoming a sustaining member. As a sustainer, you make ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card.
A lot of people will give $10 or $20 a month. You choose whatever amount is right for you. You could become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
The great thing about Wisconsin Public Radio is that you get access to the whole world. That really makes a difference in your life. You get the news and information you need to stay informed and conversations that make you think, along with great music and entertainment that helps you relax.
And no matter where you are when you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, you are connected with the whole world, hearing from artists, reporters, experts, and your neighbors. Because you appreciate this connection to the wider world, make your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Rob, I don't know about you, but I don't often find places where I actually get more than what I pay for. Well, WPR is one of those places where that's true every single day. Think about maybe a gift of $2 a day to support the programs you love.
Hard to buy a lot for $2, but at WPR, $2 a day makes a lot of great conversations possible. That would be $60 a month, but you pick the amount that's right for you and then give. Last chance to give during the Spring Member Drive. Last chance to give during Central Time, too, for that matter. Make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and thank you. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a large share of Americans don't read, watch, or listen to the news. We'll check out some new research on what makes people tune out. First, Rachel Vasquez joins me on the air now for the Spring Member Drive here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Last day of the Spring Member Drive. You rely on the Ideas Network for informative, interesting conversations. We count on you to keep programs like Central Time going strong.
We really do count on you, and that's because listener support is the largest source of funding for WPR programs like Central Time, and that's why your gift of any amount right now makes a huge difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Got a good start toward our goal for the hour. Looking for 13 more people to join in now during the rest of this hour. That will take us to our goal. These hourly goals are set up to make sure we have the funding for the programs you enjoy. Make your donation now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
On the Ideas Network, you hear substantial topics because you want more than just a headline. We go deeper into the issues every day. And make your donation right now in support of the programs that you count on at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Think about when you first discovered Wisconsin Public Radio. Maybe a friend recommended the great news and interesting conversations, the weekend programs. Maybe you were just scanning the dial. However you found WPR, now you're hooked.
And whether it's been years or just a few months since you found us, your contribution of $10 a month, maybe $120, supports the quality programming that you valued since the beginning of your listening. So be a part of making WPR possible right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Today, donate any amount and you could win a $1,000 gift card to Wheel & Sprocket. Buy a new bike, add a trailer for your kids or cargo, or get your hands on some of the latest cycling gear. Sustainers, you are automatically entered. No contribution is necessary. Find all of the details at WPR.org/drawing. You can't win if you don't enter, so make your gift of any amount right now. Here's how.
You can do that at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs you count on. It's Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Rachel Vasquez. Your support today of Wisconsin Public Radio keeps all the programs you enjoy going strong. Whether you give $10 a month or $100 a month, we really do appreciate and count on your gift.
Yeah, we count on it, and we know that you work really hard for your money, and you support the things that are meaningful to you with that money. Well, Wisconsin Public Radio is one of those things. You get information about events in our region, around the state, around the entire world, and you also get music and humor and storytelling.
You'll want a lot of news and information in the coming year. Your support now will make it all possible. Make a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 with your gift of the amount that's right for you.
Pick whatever way works for you. The important thing is that you give. And a big, big thank you if you have given. Your support is powerful. And today, there's still something more you can do to help. You can encourage a friend to join the Wisconsin Public Radio community.
Spread the love. If you know someone who doesn't listen, why don't you encourage them to listen? And if they already listen, you can say, hey, I gave. How about you? Tell your friends and family that you support WPR. You might inspire them to do the same at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
20 minutes left in this hour, and we need 10 more people to join in, to step up and join the WPR family. You make WPR possible with your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
It is biking season, and as an added bonus for supporting the programs you love, you could win $1,000 to spend on bikes and cycling gear at Wheel & Sprocket. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. If you're a sustainer, you already have those automatic gifts coming in. Great news, you're already automatically entered.
Maybe you've been thinking about becoming a sustainer, but you haven't done it yet. Hey, that's okay. You can do it right now. It is so easy to set up. They're just monthly ongoing donations from your bank account or your credit card at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. You'll provide ongoing support for the programs you love, like Central Time, and get automatically entered in the drawings we have during our member drives.
We heard from Elaine in Madison who gave. Elaine says, I'm making a donation because I am a serious radio listener. Well, thank you so much, Elaine. Are you a serious radio listener? Or even if you're a casual or whimsical radio listener, you count on us for great conversations each and every day. We count on you to help pay for them. Make your very important gift. It really does make a difference on this last day, your last chance to give during the spring member drive. You can give now at WPR.org or make a quick phone call, 888-202-2552, and thank you. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. There are a lot of ways to check out the news these days, online and offline, but a lot of people don't. Depending on the study you look at, anywhere from 20 to 50% of Americans say they consume little or no news. In our new research, our next guest tried to figure out why not. What do you think? You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you avoid the news sometimes? Why are you listening to us? If so, do you know someone who doesn't look at the news often? Call in at 800-642-1234. Stephanie Edgerly is an associate professor and director of research at Northwestern University's School of Journalism. Stephanie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you write in your report on this that anywhere from 20 to 50% of people don't look at the news or don't look at it very often. That's a pretty wide range. But the gist is there's a good chunk of people who are staying away from the news. What do we know about that?
Yeah, so this question was really born out of a lot of my research, which was consistently finding that there's a group of people that just are not making time for news. And while I don't want to cast everybody who consumes news under the same light, certainly there are different preferences, different sources, different types of news that people do regularly seek out, I still was consistently finding this group of people that was very, very low, habitually low in consuming any type of news. And so that really was the inspiration for this project, trying to answer that why question. And what I found were a couple big factors. One related to a lack of value or a gap between how people kind of identify themselves and what they think news would provide. So that's something like, oh, I'm not interested in politics, or I'm apolitical. And they assume that politics is what news is all about. Another one was this lack of relevance. So not seeing how news connects to your daily life or will impact your daily life. And then I would say the other big finding was related to news literacy. People who were not confident in their own ability to tell fact from opinion or know how to verify if something was true, that lack of self-confidence was really suppressing news consumption, as well as I asked people kind of factual questions, like, do you know the reputation of news organizations? Or do you know how Google News is different from other news sites? People that just didn't have factual information to contextualize news, they were also not consuming a lot of news. So it's a little bit of a low value, perceptual value, and a high cognitive cost of doing the work of consuming news.
Well, let's dig into that first point, because if I worked in the media, and I do, I would be really interested in that. There's people out there who feel like the stuff that the media has for them doesn't affect their lives. Is it relevant to them? And that sounds like it could be not a them problem, but an us problem, that the media isn't connecting the dots and saying, this is why the stuff we think is important to cover matters to people. What lessons do you see there?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all have some responsibility in this problem and taking an effort and maybe seeing what we can do to curtail it. And I would include educators, and I'm one of them in that bucket. But I do think for journalists, it is a question, kind of a gut check of who are you writing for? What stories are you telling? And are you connecting issues that are important, like politics, to people's lives in a way where the connection is really clear? I would say that these tendencies or these feelings are more common among people, younger people, and people with lower levels of education. And so I hope that it really causes some reflection within the news industry about the stories that are told and how you tell them and who you're trying to connect with.
If we can flesh that out a little bit, and I've been seeing this criticism from some media watchers saying, hey, maybe focus less on the politics, you know, who's going to win, Republicans or Democrats in this debate in Congress, and focus more on the policy. If this changes, what does this mean for different groups of Americans, say, if we're talking about national politics, or Wisconsinites, if we're talking about state politics? What does it mean for you? And a lot of people do that kind of reporting. Is that part of the lesson you're taking away here?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a branding problem with the word politics. Mm-hmm. Is just equated with Washington, D.C., bickering, partisanship, and nothing to do with me. And so I think the word politics gets a little bit of a bum rap because lots of things are political. Lots of things impact people's lives. But I really try to steer journalists away from that framing of it. And even when you're talking about something like a presidential address, which is, you know, based in DC and certainly political, how, you know, I resist the urge to really lead with cues that talk about Democrats versus Republicans, liberals versus conservatives, what's happening in Washington. And my recommendation, when possible, is to do the harder work of trying to localize these stories. So you tease out a little bit more of the significance and a little bit more of the connection to people's communities and issues that will affect them.
Talking to Stephanie Edgerly, associate professor at Northwestern University's School of Journalism, about research she's done looking at people who don't follow the news at all or not very much and asking them why not. And some interesting things she heard in response. Now, Stephanie, one theory I've heard, and you address this in your research here, and I've definitely talked to callers who have thought this, people avoid the news because it's a bummer or it's overwhelming or it's overwhelmingly negative. What did you find when you asked people about that?
Yeah, this was really, if I'm being very honest here, sort of a surprising finding. I went in expecting kind of the emotional toll of news to sort of push people away. And that's the title, right? The head and the heart of news avoidance. But what I found was that that type of I'm worn out by the amount of news or news is upsetting to me really did not predict people avoiding news. And I had to pause a little bit and think why that might be and dig into the data a little more. And what I found was that feeling was common among people who consume a lot of news, as well as people who consume very little news. So those feelings don't differentiate people's news behaviors. They're sort of felt by everyone. And so what I think is happening there is that regular news consumers have a way of managing that fatigue or those upset feelings that doesn't stand in the way of their continued consumption of news. So they sort of have a workaround to deal with the emotional toll of news. Whereas I think for another group of people, these news avoiders, that emotional toll is just too much. And that's why they're staying away from news.
A big thing that's changed over the years is it used to be, you know, you had three major networks and maybe a couple UHF channels on TV, a couple few newspapers in your community, a couple radio stations. Now there's so much media out there, news and otherwise. How does that, that variety, that limitless in some ways variety of media consumption options play into this?
Right? I mean, great opportunities, but also a lot of challenges, right? There is, arguably more news out there than ever before. And at any moment, you can consume news no matter where you are. And that has a lot of positives that a lot of people are able to, you know, really delve in deep and satisfy their curiosity. But at the same time, I think, you know, there's a challenge of knowing where to go, knowing what can be trusted. Information quality is a real concern. And I would say when I do a lot of qualitative interviews talking to people, everybody knows you have to be concerned about information. It's like that message is very clearly communicated to people that you can't trust everything you see on the internet. What is less of a strong narrative is, okay, well, then what do you do? Who do you turn to? Like in a world where you can't trust things, what can you trust? And that's the trickiness, I think, about this media environment.
Yeah. How do you deal with that? Say, if you're coming from this as a media outlet who views itself as reasonably legit, given that when a consumer opens up something that they clicked on, maybe in an aggregator, it could be a legitimate news service, or it could be that weird blurred line. Oh, that's the opinion side of this reporting outlet, or this is a legitimate thing with a lean one way or another, or this is some kid in Bulgaria making a living, literally making up stories, you know, which is also a thing. Where do you start with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a problem that there's a lot of responsibility and a lot of action among several different sectors that needs to be taken. I think long-term education becomes a really big key if we want to talk about, you know, how to save the news industry. I think one effort is in schools and in classrooms and making sure that the future news audience understands the value and understands the difference between opinion and fact and knows how to, look for things that more journalistic organizations would have on their site. In the short term, I think we're seeing a movement of media organizations and news organizations displaying a little bit more openly their verification process, how many people they interviewed, how many edits went through this story, why did they select this story? I think all of that helps audiences be able to maybe sniff out when they are reading something that has followed journalistic practices of verification, and when maybe on social media they're seeing something that has an emotional headline and hasn't gone through that process.
In just our last minute, here's maybe a core question that maybe I should have started with. if some people aren't following news closely, so what? What's the damage there?
Right. And I think that's a really valid question. And my answer is twofold on that. One is concerns about the news industry. And there's some evidence that news avoidance or habitually low news consumption is growing. And so if 20 to 50% of the news audience is a news avoider and that is growing, that means the news audience is shrinking. And that really limits the reach and the resources for quality journalism. My other answer is that this gap in news consumption corresponds to gaps in community, local participation and voting. And on one hand, you might say, great, I don't want people that don't consume the news to vote. I understand that. But my kind of pushback is that these news avoiders tend to be lower educated, tend to be younger, also tend to be women. And I really wonder what that says about our communities and our democratic system if there's a particular slice of the population that's absent from spaces of decision making. And so I think it's a problem. And I think it's one that we need to take some efforts in, both journalistically on the education front and audiences, to try to address and try to develop more of the habit of regular news consumption.
We'll leave it there. Stephanie, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Stephanie Edgerly is an associate professor and director of research at Northwestern's School of Journalism. We talked to her about her latest research, The Head and Heart of News Avoidance, How Attitudes About the News Media Relate to Levels of News Consumption. Coming up, we're going to try and make some sense of what's going on between the Green Bay Packers and quarterback Aaron Rodgers and whether the two have a future together. Right now, Rachel Vasquez joins me on the air for the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Member Drive. On this last day of the drive, we are asking you to invest just a few minutes of time to support your future Wisconsin Public Radio listening.
Listener support makes up the largest piece of funding for WPR programs like Central Time, and that is why your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 is so important.
We are right on the edge of hitting our goal right now. Just need four more people to give in the next few minutes. Your gift might be the one that puts us over the top on this last day of the drive. It ends at 6 o'clock today. Make your gift to support the programs you enjoy and that you count on every day.
WPR programs are listener powered, and that means that your donation right now makes a huge difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
That's an interesting conversation we just had. A researcher who had a question. She's got a puzzle. She knew a lot of people didn't follow news, looked out to ask them why they didn't, and got some really fascinating reasons that might inform what we do in the media, what we do on this show for that matter. It's an example of the kind of conversation with up-to-the-date research on important issues that you can count on every day here on Central Time.
We cannot make these conversations happen without you, and that is because WPR is listener-supported, and that means that your donation at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 makes the many topics you tune in for every single day possible. Choose whatever amount works for you and your life, and then make your gift.
In this member drive, you could support the programs you rely on and choose to plant a tree as your thank you gift with your donation of $10 a month or more. You'll power the depth, variety, and lifelong learning you value on WPR, and your thank you gift will help grow and maintain Wisconsin woodlands. Thanks for making a difference with your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I would say that if you really enjoy public radio and you listen to it even occasionally, if it does something to enlighten you on a certain point of view, then that is value. It's valuable. But nothing in life that is of value is truly free. Being a sustaining member, even if you just donate a small amount each month, you know, what it would cost you for a cup of coffee is really, really worth it if you believe in what they're doing. And I do. I'm John from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I encourage you to join me in sustaining Wisconsin Public Radio.
My giving now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It's Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Rachel Vasquez. Listener support is the biggest source of funding for the WPR programs you count on. That's why your support during this spring member drive is such a big deal. Maybe your gift is $10 a month or $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount to give.
And if you've never given to WPR before, you might be wondering, oh, will it take time? Will it be too complicated? It's really just a short process that takes a few minutes. You answer some basic questions, your name, your address, the amount of your gift, and how you'd like to pay.
And that's it. Make that first donation to WPR. You'll feel great about it because listener support is such a big part of what makes Wisconsin Public Radio happen. Many first-time donors will give $10 a month or a one-time gift of $120, but the amount is totally up to you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's right. We want you to make the gift that works for you, and that might be a gift of $1 or $200 a month.
When three more people now support Wisconsin Public Radio programs in the next minute or two, we'll meet our goal. You could put us over the top with your gift. WPR is listener supported. That's why your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
And think about planting a tree with your thank you gift with your contribution of $10 a month or more at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. It's such a cool thank you gift because you make a difference not just for WPR, but also to help preserve the state forests.
If you are a sustaining member, thank you so much. Make today the day that you increase your support of WPR by $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount you choose, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Ricky in Madison says, I love WPR. You make me smile, think, and ponder the many layers of each topic. Well, thank you so much, Ricky. That comment makes us smile, and that is the stuff that we love to hear. What about you? Do you listen every day? Do you love WPR? If so, step up and make that crucial transition from being a listener to a member at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Join the Central Time team on this last day of our spring member drive. Give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. We can't do it without you. Join the team now. Thank you so much for your support.